From NPR News, this is Talk of the Nation. I'm Ira Flatow in New York, and for the rest of the hour, an update on that mysterious illness, severe acute respiratory syndrome known as SARS, and then a bit later, detecting chemical and biological weapons on the battlefield. But first, here's a news update from NPR's Barbara Bradley Haggerty.
Hi, Ira. First, we've heard a couple of things today. One is a couple of warnings from Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld. Earlier today, he said the U.S. had monitored shipments from Syria to Iraq, shipments with military equipment such as night vision goggles. Rumsfeld said the U.S. would consider shipments hostile acts, and Syria will be held accountable. Now, there was another warning from him as well, this one to Iraqi militants opposed to Saddam Hussein. These people have been living in Iran, and Rumsfeld says that now they are streaming back into Iraq and complicating the Allied forces' task. He wants them to stay out of the fray. As to inside Iraq, Rumsfeld said U.S. and British forces are 50 miles outside of Baghdad. Baghdad saw one of its heaviest days of bombing today. The U.S. military dropped what's believed to be called the first bunker buster. These bombs are laser-guided, and they weigh more than 4,600 pounds. Also in Baghdad, Arab television and Reuters are quoting an Iraqi doctor who says that more than 50 civilians have died when a bomb fell on a market. Now, there is no confirmation of that. There's been more fierce fighting today in the southern city of Nasiriyah. Four Marines are missing in that area. And on the humanitarian front, the United Nations Security Council voted unanimously to resume the Oil for Food program as soon as the war is over. Even before that, a British ship called the Sir Galahad arrived in the port city of Qasr with more than 200 tons of food, water, blankets, and other supplies. That's all I have for now, Ira.
Thank you, Barbara. We'll be back to you a little bit later for another news update. But now on to severe acute respiratory syndrome, or SARS, which was first reported in China in November. And now in this age of the global village, the disease has spread to many places, the U.S., Canada, other places around the world. Joining me to talk about the disease and where we are in the fight against it and just for
And this is Neil Conan in Washington. We're having difficulty with the line to Science Friday and Ira Flatow, who's at his studio there in New York, and he was beginning to talk about SARS, and let's see if we can talk for a while until we get the line back. I have absolutely no clue what's going on. I know this disease, as he mentioned, was first detected in China. And Ira, are you back with us?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
I can hear you fine. Why don't you go
ahead? Okay. I'm sorry. You know, this is live radio, and there was a war on, so you never know what can happen. Klaus Stur is a virologist, manager of the SARS etiology team for the World Health Organization in Geneva. He joins us by phone from Germany. Dr. Stur, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Good afternoon.
Good. Things are working. Also with us is NPR health policy correspondent Joanne Silberner. Joanne, thanks for joining us.
Good to be here, Ira.
Where do we stand now? Well, give us the latest and where the disease has spread to.
Well, I can answer that one. It's been in about a dozen countries so far in Asia, in Europe, and in North America.
Mm-hmm. And how it is spreading it around? Is it spreading around by airplanes, people going around to different places?
Well, I think Dr. Sturz and others are working on that. That's not clear right now. But one thing that is clear is that it's not that easy to spread. People aren't getting it from having been walking down the street.
Dr. Stur, do we know what it is now? Have we identified the pathogen, the germ, or whatever it is there?
The pathogen which is causing SARS is identified as a coronavirus. This is a virus which has been first seen in Hong Kong by a group which is located in the Hong Kong University. CDC Atlanta and many other laboratories have afterwards also isolated this coronavirus from very many patients and their specimens in many countries. We have investigated samples from Singapore, from Hanoi, from Vietnam, from Hong Kong, as well as from Canada. And then many of these patients, this coronavirus was found, and it's now believed that this is a causative agent. Perhaps I can quickly say a word about the transmission of this virus or the pathogen which is causing the disease. What we know is that relatively close contact, person-to-person contact, is necessary for the spreading of this virus. So it means that one person cannot so easily infect it if he is far away from another infected person. So close contact is necessary. We call that droplet infections, or little drops are being spreading from an infected person to another person, and viruses are on these droplets and can so travel to from an ill person to a susceptible one.
There were reports in some of the media, specifically the New York Times today, that suggest that the virus gets weaker with transmission. Is that true?
Well, you know, this disease is, as far as public health is concerned, and as far as we know little about it, it's about 2 to 3 weeks old. Mm-hmm. We know that first cases were reported in Guangdong province, the most southern province in China, already in mid of November. But the disease has been established as a public health threat around about 3 weeks ago. So we really are at the very beginning of understanding what this disease is all about, how it's being transmitted, what type of disease it causes, and how we can possibly diagnose it.
Go ahead.
What we are seeing is anecdotal information now that it looks as if secondary cases, so those which have been infected from someone, might come down with a slightly milder disease. There is some indication that so-called index cases, the first person who was found to be very ill, for instance in a hospital, that this person has a very severe disease, whilst others who are getting infected from that person, even though the disease is also very severe, that it looks as if it's somewhat milder. And there are already now tertiary and quaternary cases, so other people who got infected in that transmission chain, and it looks as if they also are developing slightly milder disease.
Dr. Sture, could I just ask you, is there a model for that? Are there other infectious diseases that get less severe as it moves out from the index case?
Yes, there are. Now, we call this virus a virus which is not very smart. A smart virus, a smart pathogen, would infect the host, would make it very sick, would start replicating on the account of the host, be transmitted to the next susceptible person, and so far and so on. So it can maintain the transmission chain, but it would not kill the host because the pathogen would die with this host. Now, one of the viruses which does something similar is the rabies virus. It kills the host, but there are other mechanisms which maintain a constant perpetuation of this virus in its host. Now, this virus, as it behaves, is not very smart. Now, we believe that, as any other pathogen, it might undergo some evolution and get adapted. So some strains might emerge of this virus which are smarter. They don't kill the person, but cause still severe disease. That increases the chance of this pathogen to be transmitted to the next person. So what we are seeing is potentially an evolutionary development of a virus, but we don't want that virus to go that far. We don't want another epidemic global disease. So that's the reason why we have issued that global alert on the 15th of March, and we are seeing more and more cases now in more and more countries.
Tell us about the WHO urging airports to screen passengers that are going to board a plane.
Now, WHO has not issued any travel restrictions. The pattern of the finding would suggest that very close contact is necessary to transmit the disease. So we have not issued any travel restriction. We are reviewing the data every day.
So
what we have done this yesterday is we are recommending to countries which would like to step up control measures. We are recommending some activities which could potentially be useful to identify SARS patients in airports.
Is there an infrastructure? If someone comes down with some sort of symptoms, do hospitals know enough about the symptoms to recognize it as something different than the flu or a cold or something like that?
Well, we have to be very grateful to the press and to the media to distribute the information on SARS. control of infectious diseases is built very fundamentally on two pillars. One is information, and the other one is education. So people who are feeling that they develop the symptoms and they know what they have to look for and, what, and they know about the disease, they will be responsible and go to the next doctor and report to the doctor. For instance, we are recommending that in airports, in countries who wish to really step up their measures, that what they could do is to screen passengers boarding airplanes, to screen them and to see if there is anyone who has an acute respiratory disease, who has high fever or is coughing, and then these patients would then be isolated and be investigated and being given the appropriate care.
But I'm saying that if someone like myself or someone else who has been to Hong Kong or these other countries, and even it was showing up in other parts of the world, the United States, the reports, possible reports today of possibly seeing even in New York State, and there are reports in Canada. If someone lives in any of these cities and they go to the hospital thinking, you know, maybe I have something, can the hospital recognize it?
Yes, the hospital can recognize it.
Now, is there a test for it?
Yes. Now, the disease develops usually with high fever above 38 degrees centigrade. That, I think, should be about 104 Fahrenheit. Headaches, myalgia, and develops relatively quickly into a lower respiratory tract infection. People have a dry cough. They have breathing difficulties, and in an X-ray, you see abnormalities in both lungs. And if all this comes together, the chances that the person has SARS are very high. Now, everyone who is fulfilling those criteria and comes from a country where SARS is known or had contact with a SARS patient should be isolated and should be observed for at least 10 days to see if the person develops these very severe atypical lower respiratory tract infection.
And the treatment then is just treating the symptoms?
Well, we have no specific treatment for this disease, and this is why we believe this is a public health emergency. We're having a viral disease for which we have no antiviral drug, for which we have no vaccine. The virus is traveling relatively rapidly by planes. We see, however, that it can be contained if very strict barrier nursing, so very strict hygienic measures are being applied in hospitals. But specific treatment does not exist. Some hospitals have been trying a combination of ribavirin, which is an antiviral substance, and steroids, which is an anti-inflammatory drug. And they have seen some transient improvement in patients, but there has been no proper clinical trial conducted yet. You must imagine about, exactly 2 days ago, 80 clinicians from 13 countries talked, and these are all clinicians who are treating SARS patients, talked about this disease for 1.5 hours and tried to pull all the information together. Currently, we are synthesizing that information and trying to deduce treatment and management practices. By the way, this is going to be published on our website later today.
Talking with Klaus Stöhr, who is the head of the manager of the SARS etiology team for the World Health Organization, and also NPR health science health policy correspondent Joan Silberner on Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Dr. Stöhr, can you give us an idea of the numbers? The numbers changing daily. What people who are infected?
Yes, the numbers are changing daily. We must say that the increase in number is caused by two factors. One is, of course, there is more surveillance. And that's what we feel has been important and should be strengthened. We need to track down all infected people. We have to find them. We have to treat them. We should isolate them and make sure that they do not propagate the virus to other susceptible people. So that's one of the reasons for the increase in number of cases. The other one is that we are still seeing transmission within hospitals and increasingly now also outside hospitals in the community. And that's something which we need to better understand. We need to better understand how this virus is being transmitted from one person to another. Now, we have today 1,435 officially recorded cases with 53 deaths. This is a case fatality rate of 3.5%. It means that 3.5% of those people who fall ill do die. And this is relatively high despite the very intense care these patients are receiving. Many of them have to be put on mechanical ventilation, so they cannot breathe anymore themselves. And if they would not be mechanically ventilated, they would die. Mm-hmm. 800 cases have been found in Guangdong province, in the most southern Chinese province. What is very encouraging is to see that in Hanoi, quite a few patients could be discharged. There have been no new cases during the last 2 days. There has been an increase in cases in Hong Kong. Again, Singapore had two more cases. We're also seeing a slight increase in number of cases in Canada.
So there is no fear that this is spreading out like wildfire around the world?
Well, what we are observing is a relatively rapid transmission to countries from individual patients. We have to step up surveillance to make sure that we do catch every person who may have the disease, to isolate a person before the virus is transmitted further. The reason why we want surveillance is to prevent the disease to spread any further. We have now more indications as if family members are becoming infected from healthcare workers and friends. This is something which we have to keep a very close eye on. What we need now is, and what I described before, the case definition, so how do we detect the case? What we need now is a diagnostic test, and that's what our group is actually working on. We would like to move from clinical inspection of persons, seeing that they're coughing, sneezing, making an X-ray, measuring their temperature, and looking at blood, at their blood. What we need now is a diagnostic test which would detect the pathogen and thus can differentiate between an infected person and a healthy person.
And the odds of coming up with that soon?
Well, I think we are on a very good track. On the 17th of March, WHO established a global network of laboratories, top-notch, world-renowned laboratories, who have been working independently for very many years on different subjects. There are 11 laboratories in 9 countries. On the 21st of March, which means 3 days after this network was established, one of them already isolated a virus, could replicate the virus in cell culture, could demonstrate a virus particle by electron microscopy. 2 days later, mm-hmm. another laboratory developed a very rapid test to detect the RNA, the genetic material.
Dr. Sturt, we're running out of time.
Okay, but what I'm trying to say, diagnostic tests are becoming available. They have been in use in Hong Kong since today, this morning.
I've got to go. Dr. Klaus Sturt, manager of the World Health Organization's SARS etiology team, and also Joanne Silberner, health policy correspondent for NPR News. Thank you both for joining us this hour. I'm Ira Flatow, and this is Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News.